Well, good morning, everybody. Good to see everyone here on this mild day in northern Ohio, and welcome to all of you on the internet here for our guest second debut on the internet, and hopefully from this point on we will be live at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. At least that's what we intend to do. I hope we'll be on time in most cases. If not, just be patient. We will be there probably, I'm sure, within 2 or 3 minutes thereafter. But we're going to hopefully start right on time in light of the fact that we are indeed on the internet. John had gone ahead and referenced the fact we're going to be having some special speakers. As many of you know, we do have visiting speakers from time to time throughout the area here in Medina, Ohio. And for those of you on the internet especially, not knowing perhaps who will be here on what particular Sabbath, you may want to just go ahead to our local website at CGIMedina.org, and there we have a speaking schedule of the anticipated speakers and visiting speakers that will be coming in to this particular area that will be visiting us at different times. So you can keep that, keep abreast of that, I guess you could say, over at CGIMedina.org. Also, before I get into some other announcements on an international level, I wanted to just mention one other thing, and that was that there will be a special meeting right after church again, 5 minutes, that's about it, as soon as services are over. So if you'd all remain seated, certainly would appreciate that as well. Just a few things here on the international scene as well as the national scene. I'd like to share with all of you and remind some of you that may be aware of this already. Super Sabbath weekend in Wagner, Oklahoma, April 15th, April 17th. The invitation is on the News of the Work. You can go to CGI.org. Again, at that website, get all this information that I'm about to read to you, if indeed you may be interested in attending this. This is April 15th through the 17th at the beautiful Sequoia State Park, and I believe that's in Oklahoma. So for those of you who would like to maybe spend the last day of Unleavened Bread over there, the Tulsa Church of God will be joining the CGI, many other brethren, for the weekend. It'll be a whole weekend affair. The Tulsa Church of God praise and worship team will lead music for the weekend. Activities will include sermons and Bible studies. There'll be cookouts, Bible quiz bowl, seminars, and so on to keep everybody busy. If you haven't made reservations, you can call the lodge at 918-772-2545. Make reservations if you would like. Tell them that you are with the Church of God International so that I guess you can get a special rate perhaps. I'm not sure exactly about that, but that usually is the reason why you need to identify yourself. At least that's what we say for the Feast of Tabernacles anyway. A second item, Old School Summer Camp this year, 2017, is scheduled for July 3rd through the 7th at the Timberline Baptist Camp in Tyler, Texas. This is designed for the youth. If you have children who are interested, please email Jeff Reed at jeff@cgi.org, jeff@cgi.org, if you're interested in having your children attend this event. This is called the Old School Summer Camp, July 3rd through the 7th, and you are more than welcome to make arrangements through Jeff Reed there through his website. The cost of it will be $180. Registration will start this month, February, so keep that in mind. And again, a lot of this information is on the website at CGI.org, so if you're interested in more details about it, just go there. They've got some other links here that you can click and get some additional things. Just to bring your attention to the traveling ministers, do keep in mind Van Stinson, myself, Mike James, Wayne Hendricks, John Reedy, Adrian Davis, so many, Wynn Skelton, on the road, flying around here in the skies as well as driving on the roads. So do keep all of us in your prayers. We greatly appreciate that simply because there are a lot of dangers out there, needless to say, in this day and age that we're living in, even at truck stops and rest areas on the highway now. They're not like they used to be years ago when you could just pull off, take a little bit of a 15-minute power nap and get on your way. Nowadays, you take a 15-minute power nap and you might might not wake up. So do be careful, even yourselves when driving, but do keep in mind the ministry in addition. Just wanted to share with you some things on the ins and outs of the work last week. This is always a weekly report. I like to share this occasionally with all of you. Last week, we had a fairly decent income for the week. We had $24,089 come in for the week, sent out last week, 940 booklets. We had 310 first-time contacts. I guess that's through the internet. One donor, one brand new donor. One's better than none, right? But nevertheless, that's okay. We'll just build it a step at a time. We had weekly website views of 27,754 visits to our website. You do the arithmetic and multiply that out by the weeks, and you can begin to see the outreach potential that the Church of God International's ministry is doing on behalf of Jesus Christ. So it's really certainly encouraging and interesting reach that we are now developing through the internet and all the marketing efforts that we're doing in terms of the website itself and different products that we have that are posted on that website. Weekly YouTube views, this is one of our products, 9,120 YouTube views on many of the products that we have, from little YouTube vignettes to the armor of God to biblical news updates and commentary, web chats and all of that. We had 9,120 views of that. 173,500 weekly Facebook post reach. I guess this is the potential reach that we have through Facebook of the network that's available there through that particular platform of Facebook. 173,503 folks potential were capable of being networked in and or exposed to the Church of God International's work and ministry. Webcasts in Tyler, Texas, over there, all you folks out there in cyberspace watching the services that comes on at 11 o'clock Central Time, about almost just short of 1,300 connections. 1,300 connections. That's not necessarily just 1,300 people. Could be two people to each connection. You multiply that, it's 2,600 people or so. Three people, you do the arithmetic, you can see, again, the potential audience that now webcasting on the internet provides the possibility and potential of. So do continue to keep in your prayers the multiplication of additional connections for friends and relatives and so on, because it is important in this day and age, brethren, that we're living in. Without a doubt, the dangerous times certainly do need to be brought to the attention of many more people here throughout the North American continent, as well as the United States and other parts of the world. The family PEP. Now, Jeff told me about what PEP stands for, and I've got a good memory, but it's just short. And so I forgot what it is, but we had 689 views, connections. I'm not quite sure. I'll get more information on what PEP means. That's a pretty good little acronym, though. I think it's probably something about the youth, if I'm not mistaken, and families in that regard. Last week, the results of Trust and Conflict, Mike James on the Armor of God telecast that was broadcasted through the internet and other means of television that we have on public access, 428 with a 73 first-time caller rate, which comes out to about 17% of new contacts. This week, we have Tony Buchert doing alien visitations. Alien visitations, and I'll tell you, with all the hubbub on the internet, that might not be a bad program to watch in regards to some of the things that are on the internet. As a matter of fact, we just did a biblical news update and commentary. It's brand new. It's just on the internet. It was posted, I think, yesterday, titled Internet Conspiratorial Observations. Might be worth a look-see, if nothing else, just for your own curiosity to see some of the topics that we covered there. Went ahead and covered about four major internet observations that are more along the lines of conspiratorial advancement, and attempted to draw that back into the Bible a little bit with some precautionary statements that I think certainly would be wise for many of us today, because there is just so much out there. I mean, everything from soup to nuts. And I mean that in some cases literally, because it just is amazing in terms of the subjects that are out there. So do keep that in mind, because there is a lot of fake news. And also keep in mind, you know, these people out there on the internet with some of these websites that they have and so forth make money on advertising, and therefore the more interesting, curious, appealing their topic might become, they can kind of ring you in, and the more hits they get, the more advertising they attract, and consequently more money they make. And so it seems as though, you know, as far as integrity of news and what have you, seems to be dropping by the wayside in lieu of the almighty dollar. So be careful you don't get sucked up in a lot of these hooks that are out there and end up chasing rabbits down dark holes, as I've often said, and waste a lot of time, precious time of your life. So do keep that in mind. At any rate, I thought I'd share all this with you. And we're going to go on now with the main message, of which I want to take a moment to just introduce to our internet folks the Bible study that we've been going through in the book of Romans. And today I'm going to go ahead and continue this Bible study in Romans chapter 15, as we have been going chapter by chapter over the last 2 years, line upon line, salt and pepper throughout many of the other sermons that have been in between with our visiting speakers and so on. But we do intend to release these Bible studies, video Bible studies, on a podcasting arrangement on a weekly basis. And we haven't decided yet just exactly what day we're going to do that, but you may want to look forward to the availability of all those chapters whereby you can go back and watch what we have done through the book of Romans on a weekly basis. Over the next week or so, those announcements will be made and clarified as to what day and time of the week they'll be available, and you can tune in. We're also going to try to make arrangements whereby questions can be asked as well, and then later on we can go ahead and answer them in some kind of a post-production fashion and form. But with that, this will be, a little bit of a teaser for those of you who are being introduced to the book of Romans for the first time, and, of course, the continuing story of those here in Medina who have been following through from chapters 1 through 14 that we completed some weeks ago. So, chapter 15, if you'll all turn your Bibles to Romans chapter 15, we'll get started here. And just as a little recap in knitting this together with Romans 14, I wanted to bring back our attention to the point of remembering Romans 14 is focused on and primarily designed to address courtesy, right? It was designed to address consideration. It was designed to bring to your attention the fact that even in some cases, though you may be comfortable with something in your Christian walk, if you're indeed with somebody that may not share that comfort level, even though it's okay to do, even though it's all right to do, the Apostle Paul makes it very clear in Romans 14 that if you might offend that individual or cause that individual hurt or pain or confusion, then his recommendation was it not, to go ahead and forego that, sacrifice yourself for a minute, or for that event, or whatever it may be in terms of what is necessary to provide peace with that individual and the companionship for that particular time. And we get that. Romans 14 is all about that. Paul goes through a few examples with regards to attempting to try to emphasize the issues and details with that principle, and certainly I believe makes a very good case. As he wraps it up here in verse 22, he says, "Have you faith?" This is Romans 14:22. "Have it toward yourself before God. Happy is he that condemns not himself in that thing which he allows." And I felt that was a very profound statement, because it's very important you don't condemn yourself in the things that you allow in your Christian life. And that goes to this point that Paul's been talking about in Romans 14, throughout the whole course of that chapter of even though it may be okay to do, whatever that item might be you feel you're able to do, if it offends your brother, that allowance could be then spoken evil of. Don't do that. Paul says avoid those kinds of situations with regards to your own reputation and yourself. Verse 23, he goes on and he closes out the chapter, chapter 14, verse 23, stating this, "He that doubts is damned if he eats, because he eats not of faith. For whatsoever is not of faith is sin." And that says it all, brethren. We cannot force our degree of faith, our degree of conversion, our degree of familiarity and comfort with God's truth on somebody else. We need to allow people within the congregations that we attend or with friends and relatives that we intermix with to allow God to have their own time, to work with them, taking advantage and opportunity, as opportunity may come to you, to share some truth if those opportunities allow for it, but certainly not being pushy, not being overburdening, overwhelming, almost, you could say, radical or militant, you know, about your faith. Don't do that, because what will often happen, you'll alienate people. You will close the door, and if you close the door on somebody that you're trying to perhaps make some progress with in introducing some of God's truth to, you'll lose them. And then you won't be able to have any opportunity to make any headway with them. So do take a more sensitive approach. That's what Paul is mentioning, considering the fact of others and their limitations and degree of conversion and or awareness of what you might be familiar with, but they are not necessarily familiar with. So he continues here, and as we bridge into chapter 15, we read this. "We then, that are strong, ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves." And here again, he still capstoning, still referencing back, reconnecting with Romans 14, mentioning that those of us who are strong in the faith should expect more from ourselves to do the right thing and not offend, to try to keep the peace. It reminds me of a scripture. I'd like to kind of tie this in as a reference over here in the book of Galatians, chapter 6. This is an interesting point that I think it bears merit to keep in mind in most cases, especially if you, as a Christian brother and or sister, see someone who's having a hard time, who's having a difficult time. Here in chapter 6, book of Galatians, verse 1, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted." So here you come up on somebody that's got a problem, you hit him and you say, "You know what? What's the matter with you? I mean, I can do this, you can do this." And you really hammer him in your self-righteous approach in trying to correct him? No. That's not the way to do it. What Paul is saying is be more reasonable, be more sensitive about this. Understand that you too have your own weaknesses, your own Achilles heels. And so as a result, be cautious. Go in meekness and do the best you can to try to bring the attention of this individual's weakness and or problem to their attention so that they can attempt to at least try to bear up on it, kick back against it, and maybe even make some progress to overcome it through the encouragement and or direction or redirection that you might have opportunity to offer, because that isn't your battle, so you're not emotionally tied to it. And consequently, because he or she is, it's more difficult because it really is whatever it may be, an addiction of some sort. And I'm not necessarily just saying whether it be alcohol or drugs. I'm saying any kind of addiction, whatever it may be that's causing them problems in their life. You, because you're not emotionally tied to it, might be able to offer better advice, more balanced advice. And as a result, they can identify with that and make some progress in overcoming that. But if you nail them in a self-righteous fashion, making them feel bad and essentially making them feel overwhelmed by it and futilistic, you know what? You're not helping that individual. You're discouraging them and causing them to perhaps even resist what you're offering in terms of the way of help. He says in verse 2, and this goes to this same point, Paul writing to the book, in the book, that is, of Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, "Bear you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself." So if you think you're all that holy and mighty, and you think you can take this individual's situation on and just ramrod your degree of conversion, your degree of commitment, your degree of comfort in this problem that they may have because you overcome it long ago, or you may be above it because it's never been a problem in your life. Paul is saying, don't do that. Don't think that. You've got to put yourself, it's the old adage, put yourself in another guy in their shoes. Remember that old adage? You put yourself in their shoes. It's called the process of empathy. That's what it's all about. Being empathetic, understanding, knowing that, you know what, that individual did it. I don't understand how they can do that. I mean, it's beyond me. I can't, for the life of me, think of how they could embrace something like that. But, you know what? I think I might be able to help them. I think I might be able to help them. So if indeed you have opportunity to do that, and that individual might reach out to you, Paul is saying, do it humbly, do it meekly, because guess what? You're not perfect either. And that's the point that he's trying to say here. So do it, but do it gently, do it sensitively, do it in a hopeful fashion that you can incur progress in that individual's life through their, hopefully, using some of the things that you might say as stepping stones for them to get out of the muck and quagmire that their life has become. He goes on, he says, verse 3, "For if a man think himself to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone, not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden." And that's true. So again, Paul's coming back to this point. Don't think you're so righteous, holy, and mighty. He goes on here and continues, "Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teaches in all good things. Be not deceived, God's not mocked, for whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. For if he that sows his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." I've come across people, brethren, that have gotten weary in well-doing in some cases. They think, what's the use? Well, that guy is lost. He's a loser. He's not only such a loser, he's a jerk. I can't talk to the guy, you know, and people write it off. No, what Paul is saying is, look, don't become weary in well-doing. Challenge yourself. Don't write people off. Don't say that there's no hope for them. Do the best you can to try to find a means by which. And that's why I'm mentioning the fact and emphasizing this key point that Paul is attempting to try to let us all know is, don't alienate people. Do the best you can to keep the door open so that you can continue the communications. Because even though today's communication may not be, or today's memos may not be able to meet and or reach them, maybe tomorrow's memos will. You know, maybe tomorrow's communications will. So don't be impatient. Take your time, a little bit, baby steps, if need be. But the point of it is, and here's what we need to resolve ourselves to. I've learned this over the years. The approach is, how can I help that person? Not how can I write that person off, or not and turn your back at them and walk away. No. How can I help the person? We have a motto in CGI's ministry. In our MAP programs, we attempt to try to advance that approach in ministry. But guess what? It is our ministry. As Christians, how can we help that person? Underscores, or at least it should, underscore our approach in not most cases, not in some cases, all cases. That's the challenge. All cases, regardless of whether or not they may be homosexual, regardless of the fact of whether or not they may be transgender, and they're confused about what bathroom to use. Maybe you can help them out. Whether or not they have certain philosophies or differences of opinion in politics. Whether or not Trump is their president, or Trump is not their president. You see, we got to allow for certain things to occur so that we can get along with each other. And you're going to see something along these lines that Paul is leading us to understand even more succinctly in a moment. But the point goes very hard to all of us that we've got to be open and embracing within means, never compromising, but doing the best we can to be all things to all people, but without compromise. What did Paul say in other scriptures? I became a Jew to win the Jew. I became weak to win the weak. He adjusted himself. Now, he didn't say he was going to go and try and save all the guys in strip joints and go there and try to preach and he'll just go there. I mean, that's not what he's saying. He's saying all within the laws of God, of course. He's got his line in the sand that he's going to draw. But the fact of it is, and it remains very well put by Paul, that we've got to be very understanding and sensitive to the needs of other people if indeed we are going to help them. Verse 10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, look at this, especially unto them who are of the household of faith, especially those in the church. Why? Why would Paul emphasize that and section that out? Do you know why? Because we, of all people, should have the intent of improving ourselves. So therefore, we, of all people, should be open to advice, correction, instruction, help in all things. So therefore, Paul is saying those of us in the church should have extra patience with those of us in the church, the household of faith, and do the best you can, brethren, to look out for each other, to look out for each other, to do the best we can to be there for each other, not to be there so that I can kick him down, not to be there so that I can pump myself up and say, well, I'm better than old Anson here. I'm picking on you. but you know what I'm saying. That's not the point. We're family. The church is family, wherever it may be. And being that we're on the internet, it's more appropriate to even say this. Outside of these walls in Medina, out throughout the globe, when you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, you meet people from all over, in some cases, the world. And we are of the household of faith. And Paul says, especially those of the household of faith, be patient with them. Because guess what? We're all in process. We're all changing. And admittedly, some of us have achieved certain degrees in collecting our thoughts to Christ, in progressing our behaviors in certain areas, comparably speaking, that are better than what we were. And that's okay. But you're not the standard. We together need to help each other come to a closer relationship with Christ. With Christ, you see. And it's incumbent on all of us to help each other along. How do we do that? By being patient with each other. Helpful. How can I help? How can I help? We've got new people among us, freshly baptized. We got people that sometimes come in visiting us. Don't have a clue. They came by invitation of somebody else and have absolutely no clue of what we even may stand for, other than the fact that his buddy or girlfriend or whatever said, you know what, I wish you would come to my church. I think you'll find it interesting. Oh, okay. And they come thinking they're going to find it interesting. Whatever that means. Never knowing what interesting might mean in detail. We have people that come in and among us who are here only because they understand the Sabbath. They just understand that, you know what, it's time for me to start meeting and going to church on Saturday instead of Sunday. They come in among us, and all of a sudden we level them with clean and unclean meats, the holy days. There's no Christmas, there's no Easter. And the person walks out of here after services with his head spinning saying, wow, I'm out of here. I ain't coming back there. I didn't know that we weren't supposed to keep Christmas too. I can't do that. What about the children? See, they're not even prepared. They're not even prepared to even think in some of these other areas. What do you mean I can't eat pork? Well, lobster? You're expecting me to give up lobster? And they're not prepared for it. So it's incumbent on us to be patient, sensitive. How can I help this person? Ask questions. Probing questions. Get to know before you begin to really level down. Develop, it's called a relationship, so that you can understand then how to better communicate. Okay, well, let's get back to Romans chapter 15. Because it looks like we're not going to finish this in one chapter. But that's the way it goes. Over here in verse, where we were, in verse 3, or verse 2, let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification. Please his neighbor for good to edification. That is, being agreeable. For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached you fell on me. And this goes to this figure of speech, this relationship, this idea that the principle of what Christ did for us is what now we need to be doing for each other. This sacrificial lifestyle, this sacrificial behavior of putting ourselves out there for one another. And even if it does maybe hurt a little bit, maybe it's a little bit uncomfortable, whatever that situation may call for us to do in terms of and in the way of sacrificing and or putting ourselves out there, whatever that might mean in the situation we're talking about, the fact of it is we need to be willing. We need to be willing to do that. What am I talking about? Well, it might take some time. Maybe all of a sudden, you know, old Homer here, your buddy that you've been hanging around with for years, or maybe you just met, needs some of your time. And so, guess what? Maybe you don't have the time, but you need to take the time. So, you do the best you can in answering the question or laying down the venue by which, how can I help this individual? I'm going to carve off Tuesday night for them. I'm going to carve off Sunday afternoon for them, whatever it may be, and give them some time and have opportunity to maybe let them, whatever they need to do, spout off, get something off their chest, and or maybe look for some advice and counsel from you because they know you, they've got a good relationship with you, they're comfortable with you, so they can be themselves with you in hopes to maybe get some insight on what they're dealing with. And all that, brethren, what Paul is saying to all of us is that we need to avail ourselves for those purposes. When and if the need should ever arise among those we interact with. And that's what he's saying here with regard to verse 2, let every one of us please his neighbor, that is, to be helpful, please your neighbor, for his good to edification. That's the purpose. It's not to swindle them. It's not to take advantage of them. It's not to take opportunity like an opportunist and use them for something and leverage maybe their name, their reputation for something that you can self-gain by. No, 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 no. It's for edification, for help, for the betterment of, the uplifting of. That's what this Greek word means, for the encouragement, uplifting, and the improving of each and one of us. So, verse 3, we already read, "For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached you fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope." And what he's referencing here, brethren, is the fact that in chapter 3, he's actually quoting in chapter 3 where he says this, "The reproaches of them that reproached you fell on me." He's quoting there Psalms 69, referencing the fact to these Romans as he's writing to them in preparation of a visit that he intends to do and execute when he goes to Spain, on his way to Spain. Remember chapter 1 when we were going through all the introductories and laying down the groundwork and the landscape of this whole book. The fact of it was he's writing this book in hopes to develop a platform by which he can evangelize out west. And he's looking to Rome by writing this treatise to share with them the truths of the gospel that he himself, Paul, understands very clearly and wants to share with them so that they're all on the same page. So when he arrives, he can use Rome as a base of operation. And so he's referencing here the Old Testament and the Scriptures for certain points of authority to allow and afford them in Rome to know and to recognize, and us today in the 21st century for us to know and recognize that, guess what? The Old Testament has a lot to offer. And that was the Scriptures. And consequently, those were the words from God that gives me, Paul in this case, the leverage to speak with this authority to this point, to be selfless and so forth and so on. And it's nothing new. Paul is quoting Psalm 69 verse 9 to illustrate to us that in those Scriptures, which happens to be the only Scriptures available at the time in the early New Testament church, because the New Testament wasn't written yet. So the Scriptures that Paul's referencing are the Old Testament. And he's showing very clearly the Old Testament does indeed have the information that he's talking about here and actually gives authority to be this way. In verse 5, he continues, "Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another according to Christ," or after Christ's example would be another way to interpret this in the Greek. In what Paul is pointing to here is Christ again as the model. He says, "Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another according to Christ Jesus." Why? He answers the question. "That you may with one mind, one mouth, glorify God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ." And what he's talking about is we, that is all of us Christians, no matter what congregation we may be in, whether it's Medina, whether it's over in Texarkana, whether it's down in Largo, Florida, whether it's anywhere in the world, in London, England, wherever it may be, in the Philippines or even Australia, the fact of it is we should all be on a similar same page toward our approach toward this stuff. And what stuff am I talking about? I'm talking about being patient and sensitive toward other people who do not share the same degree of comfort with God's truth that you share, and or which, if you see someone with a problem, have the wherewithal and patience to be able to address that individual with patience, sensitivity, and empathy to help them. Now that's a big card. That's a big expectation that Paul's putting on all of us as Christians. Yet, nevertheless, when you put it in perspective of what Jesus Christ did for us, you can't help but to tumble back to Romans chapter 12 and in verse 1, where he said what? Paul. What did Paul say? He said, you know, it's our reasonable service, considering what Jesus did for us. It's the least we can do, considering what Jesus did for us. And as much as it sounds overwhelming to do, and it only sounds that way because human nature is contrarian to this. That's why it sounds overwhelming. Because for some of us, and depending on how long we've been walking with the Lord and applying this stuff, because guess what? Years with walking with Jesus do not necessarily mean you've made progress. People can warm a chair in church services for years and not change one iota. But if you are engaged, if you are in the game, if you are in play, then your degree of conversion certainly can afford you, hopefully, certain abilities and expression of gifts that can be very helpful to the rest of your network that you interact with. And that's not only within the church, but also outside of the church too, outside of the church as well. So we go on here, and he says, let me go back here too, just for a moment, and digress to Ephesians chapter 4 for a moment, because this goes back to this being on one page and helping each other to better understand the degree of conversion we all need to be at. As pointed out in Ephesians 4, verse 1, Paul, writing to the church in Ephesus, along the same lines of what he's alluding to here in Romans 15, states this, "I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called, with all lowliness and meekness." This is the worthiness. Walk worthy of the vocation. That is this way of life. This lifestyle is what he's talking about. Wherewith you are called. Verse 2 now, chapter 4, book of Ephesus, Ephesians here. With all lowliness and meekness, with longsuffering, forbearing one another. Paul's appealing to the fact that we endure. That's what that word means. You endure with each other because, frankly, in some cases, there are people that perhaps weigh on your nerves. There are people from time to time that, you know what, really make it hard to get along with. And frankly, because of certain attitudes, approaches, demeanors, the way they are, can't get close to them. Seems like sometimes, more I try, I take two steps back. Because these people have such walls around them. They're not, perhaps, themselves comfortable in their own skin, so they have certain, what we call in the circles of psychology, defenses, of which keeps people at bay. You can only get so close, unless, of course, through relationship. Through a relationship, they can begin to allow you beyond the first layer of the onion, if you know what I'm saying. Maybe down to the second layer, the third layer, depending on the relationship and the level of, here's the big one, trust. Trust. How much they trust you, how much you trust them, will oftentimes be the lubricant for the relationship that you're able to develop, that will allow you to get down through the layers of the onion, whereby the value of each other's helpfulness to each other is maximized. That's where it's maximized. But sadly, unfortunately, people have this tendency to put up facades. They want you to think they're something they're not, or they want you to perhaps consider certain things about them that are adequate, good enough for you, because guess what? I don't want you getting to know me any closer than you are. And even though you may want to make better progress, they don't want you to, you won't be allowed to until you have a better relationship with them or more trust with them that comes through a relationship. Guess what? There's no shortcut to that. It takes time, experience, sharing things and or events, trips, but overall time with each other to learn these kinds of things with each other. Paul is saying, this is what we need to keep in mind, though, that helps all of this work. With all lowliness, this is verse 2 again, going back just to reiterate, chapter 4, book of Ephesus. With all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing, or enduring one another in love. That means in affection, really caring about somebody. Endeavoring, that's my intent, I'm endeavoring, I'm doing this because, no, I don't want to rip you off. No, I don't want to line my pockets with silver and gold. No, I'm not trying to steal your wife or take your house or get into your home so I can steal your watch or your Rolex or whatever it may be. I'm not trying to do that. No. It says endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. So everything should be couched, everything should be framed, everything should be corralled in the intent of, you know what, whatever it takes, let's at least keep the spirit of peace and unity as our basis of operation. And in our discussion, we talk to that end. We talk to that effect. We talk to that endeavor, hoping that that will be what we accomplish in our objectives with whatever we're attempting to address with each other. So Paul is very clear on this, and as a result is also very clear on the fact that the key to achieving this is through empathy, enduring long-suffering one another, and keeping communications and lines of communication open through lowliness and meekness, knowing full well that you aren't perfect. There's no reason, brethren, that we should be self-righteous about something. That, well, I could never think of me doing that. Why, I can't understand how anybody could believe that or do that. Why, how can they be confused about this or confused about that? Well, guess what? You're not them. You're not them. So guess what? Back off on the judgment and come forward on the empathy and learn to engage, to discuss in openness and trust what might be your problem so that you can help that person. That's what Paul's saying. That's what Paul is saying here. It's all about how can I help that person? And so he goes on here in verse 7 and says, wherefore, receive you one another, as Christ also receives us to the glory of God. Wow. That's a big order. Don't just read over that one. That's a big one. Notice that one again. Verse 7. Therefore, or wherefore, receive you each other, accept each other as Christ also accepts us to the glory of God. What am I thinking of when I read this? What I'm thinking of is where Bill Watson was in 1968 and 69. Now, I'm not going to bore you with the details, but I hearken back to your lives. Where were you when you were being called? What was your life like? And the fact that Jesus accepted you that way, that he actually had the patience to reach out to you when you were that way and say, I'm going to work with this guy. I'm going to work with this girl. Wow. And what Paul is saying is when that person walks in, whoever they may be, or whoever they may be, and they're here 10 years. They're here 15 years. He's saying, Paul is, he's still saying, look, accept them as Jesus accepted you. I've got a little saying for what it's worth. It'll get you a cup of coffee and a donut. But the fact of it is, never forget your beginnings. And hopefully that'll help insulate yourself from self-righteousness and being judgmental of other people. Remember your beginnings, brethren. Remember your beginnings. Never forget your beginnings, where you were when God called you. And hopefully in looking out at others will enhance your own ability to be more empathetic on others as they come through the degrees of change that you have come through over the years of God working with you. We've got to be so understanding in this day and age. Why do I say that? Because if you haven't noticed, the world is getting really, really bad. Very confused. And it has rubbed up on God's church. There are young people, in some cases, children of parents in God's church, who are confused of their gender. You would think, how in the world could that happen? The parents are converted. Why, I would never allow my kid to be confused about their gender. Well, guess what? It happens. And you're not those parents. And you don't know what they went through with their children or their teenager at their public school and the classes that they're influencing them with from the time they were in kindergarten, first grade, and second grade, telling them that they have the right to question this. Or the fact of someone addicted on alcohol or drugs. And you can't understand, why in the world am I here visiting you again in the hospital for the 16th time? Can't you learn you shouldn't be shooting yourself up with heroin? And they're a church member. Or they're a kid from a family who's in the church. Brethren, we've got to be there for each other. The times are upon us to stop the judging and start the empathy toward humankind, be they in the church. But Paul said, all the more if they're in the church, but also outside your workplace, outside in your colleges, outside in your high schools, outside in your barfly friends, outside, wherever they may be found. It's important, brethren, that we understand. Here's the point, that you're the light of the world. There's the point. You have a responsibility to keep that light lit. And you know how you keep the light lit? You know what the light represents? The light represents knowledge. The light represents information. You contain, as recipients of God's Holy Spirit, the logic by which you can bring a settling effect to an individual who's struggling with their self in a whole myriad of kinds of problems and difficulties. And you can imagine it just like I can, of all the varieties of things people struggle with today in their lives. Depression, worry, anxiety, panic attacks over claustrophobia, all kinds of things, all kinds of different types of phobias that we suffer from due to the exposure of the stresses and pressures that we face in our life today. But he goes on, Paul does, and says something in verse 8 that gives us again another insight, another nuance, golden nugget of why Jesus came to earth. Verse 8, most people don't go here to essentially answer the question, what is the gospel? But this is another layer, another ancillary point of the gospel. Sure, he came to die for mankind's sins. Sure, he came to announce the world-ruling government of God. Yes, he came to reveal the Father. Christ came not just for one reason. He came for a lot of reasons. And this, verse 8, summarizes it right here. Now I say, verse 8, chapter 15, book of Romans, that Jesus Christ was a minister of the circumcision for the truth of God, to confirm the promises made unto the fathers. That says it all. He came to confirm the fact that you as a human being have access to spirit life, that you have access to become changed from flesh and blood to something that Jesus told Nicodemus was spirit, whatever that is. Jesus likened it to the wind. We could probably liken it to electricity today. But the fact of it is, it's something that's immortal, something that cannot be destroyed, something that once you become embodied in, outside now of the body of flesh you currently have, but after you go to sleep, or as some would call it, die, and are resurrected, or if you're alive when Jesus returns and you're changed in the twinkling of an eye, you will be changed from this mortal condition, this mortality we have, to something called immortal. Immortality that cannot be killed. You will actually become a born son of God and have access to the family of God. That underscores the major dimension of the gospel and the message and the promises that God the Father has communicated to mankind through Jesus Christ. It's awesome. It's big. It's mind-blowing. And believe me, most people on this earth are not prepared to understand that. Just recognize it. They're not prepared to understand that. Why? Because they've been cloaked in so much misinformation. Fake news. Fake news. You're not immortal. It's fake news. That's fake news. You're not going to heaven. That's fake news. Don't believe it. They've been lying to you, including the Pope. He's been lying. You see. But the vast majority, and I say that, you know, in hyperbole for making a point, is that the world is not prepared to understand what you understand, as hard as that may be to believe. And yes, that can be heady for some. But what Paul is saying is don't let it be heady. Keep it in perspective. Understand one major thing. You understand all of this by privilege. God the Father called you by selection. It wasn't anything that you did. It was what he did. John 6 talks about. He looked down and said, aha, there's Bill. I think I'm going to wake him up. And maybe in some of our cases we could say, you know, I got slapped a few times before I finally woke up. I heard the phone ringing before I answered it a few times before because I didn't want to answer it. I didn't feel like I should answer it because I didn't want to answer it. I was afraid to answer it. And maybe some of us in our own testimonies could also concede the fact that, you know what, if I look back on my life and really get serious about it, I could probably admit to God maybe calling me before I finally recognize my calling. But it just goes to show you God's patience, his own determination and perseverance to get you to wake up. He's got a big investment in all of us, brethren. Don't sell him short. Don't sell him short because we've got a big responsibility. Paul says it's important we become empathetic toward all of mankind, even the Muslims who are chopping heads off of human beings, even people, even like leaders who disgrace the trust of young children and involve themselves in pedophilia. Liars, thieves, robbers, you and me are going to be tasked in the millennium to retrain all these people. I'm not kidding. And that's why Paul is saying, he is just saying, you need to cloak yourself in understanding what these characteristics are all about and get busy starting to express them today in the little pinheaded opportunities we have in relating with each other and other human beings. Because the day could come when all of a sudden he says, Dave, I want you to go over to Saudi and I want you to set up a city and train those people. Put your team together. And you and you and you go with Dave. You guys go over there and rebuild that area. Well, here's the information. You've been reading it, right? You've been reading it. You're familiar with it, right? Here's the document. Here's the instructions. Go! I'm not making this up. I'm not making it up. This is our calling. This is your calling. It's our calling. And the Apostle Paul is very emphatic about the demeanor by which we approach this particular calling and taking it to the steps that we need to take it in order to glorify God in His kingdom and family. Verse 9, he goes on, he says, and that the Gentiles might glorify God for His mercy, as it is written. And then he proceeds to quote here Psalms 18. And actually, he goes down through here, through verse 12, quoting over and over and over the Old Testament. He's preaching from the Old Testament, verses 9 through 12, because the New Testament did not exist, proving the validity, importance of the Old Testament. Anybody, brethren, who tells you the Old Testament has no relativity in today's 21st century to the New Testament Christian does not know what they're talking about. As a matter of fact, Wayne had mentioned a very profound statement one time on web chat while we were just talking, because web chats are unscripted, and he just kind of came up with this off the top of his head. I find it very unique when he said, not once did any of the apostles quote the New Testament in the New Testament. And that just kind of hit me, you know. Yeah, that's right. I never thought about that. No, nobody ever quoted the New Testament because the New Testament didn't exist. So nobody in the New Testament quoted the New Testament. But nevertheless, just a point in passing. But here, as pointed out, Paul says very clearly here throughout the Old Testament, using Old Testament scriptures. He goes on down here, Psalms 18:49, Deuteronomy 32, Psalms 117, Isaiah chapter 11, over and over, down through verses 9 through about 12, presenting to us a lesson, of which we will cover in part 2 of chapter 15, because time has run out on me. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and resume this particular study, first chance we get, as we'll do. And for those of you, again, on the internet, we will be hopefully making the whole study of the book of Romans via podcasting here available to all of you very shortly, so you can look forward to some of that information becoming public maybe in the next week or so. So with that, we'll just go ahead and cut this off and pick up on part 2 of chapter 15 at another date.